And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear! No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here. Declare your independence from me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Ooh, my cold is going away. Well, we have... Yeah, I keep wanting to say Chief Justice, not Chief Justice, be Chief to me. All right, Supreme Court Justice here in Arizona, Justice Clint Bullock. All right, well, first let's just say hello. Hello, Clint.
Hello, Ernie, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
And to you. Okay, I'm going to read the bio that they have for you at the Supreme Court. You go in there and they have this nice, you know, kind of half-page bio of that man. It kind of tells it. We'll go into, and we'll get to really know Clint Bullock here in just a little bit. All right, here we go. Clint Bullock was appointed by Governor Doug Ducey in January of 16 to serve on the Arizona Supreme Court. Prior to joining the court, Justice Bullock litigated constitutional cases in state and federal courts from coast to coast, including the U.S. Supreme Court. Among other positions, he served as vice president of litigation at the Goldwater Institute and as co-founder and vice president for litigation at the Institute for Justice. Now, that's how we know Clint in 2001, our very first Freedom Summit. He was a speaker, and he's going to be speaking at this year's Freedom Summit, February 2nd and 3rd, at ASU campus downtown Phoenix here, and it's got a long list of distinguished and cool people to hang out with. Clint Bullock, go see freedomsummit.com. You get to check that out. Now, he litigated in support of school choice, freedom of enterprise, private property rights, freedom of speech, and federalism, and against radical classifications and government subsidies. Justice Bullock received his Juris Doctor degree from the University of California at Davis, where he has been recognized as a distinguished alumnus, and his Bachelor of Arts degree, magna cum laude, from Drew University. He serves as a research fellow with the Hoover Institution. Among other honors, he was named one of the 90 greatest D.C. lawyers in the last 30 years by Legal Times in 2008, received a Bradley Prize in 2006, and was recognized as one of the nation's three lawyers of the year by American Lawyer in 2002 for his successful defense of school vouchers in Zelma versus Simmons-Harris. Justice Bullock is a prolific. I know that word. Justice Bullock is a prolific author of a dozen books and hundreds of articles. Among his most recent books are Immigration Wars, Forging an American Solution, co-authored with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, and we'll talk about that. And David's Hammer, The Case for an Activist Judiciary. He has also taught constitutional law at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at Arizona State University. Last time we had you on, you had just been appointed justice like a couple of years ago. And I'm like, you know, WTF, mate. How the heck did that happen? Well, you know, this is...
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Well, you read this and you can see why. So, you know, the elephant in the room here, we got to look at, all right, you know, your position on immigration and being written with Governor Jeb Bush as a Hispanic wife that was, you know, more open border kind of thing than this Trump administration deal. You got to give me your, I guess you can say, whether it's up to you, you're a justice. Well, you can tell me your personal position. I mean, you wrote a book about it. So go ahead and give me your immigration statement that you had from your book. Go.
Well, I think that we need to completely overhaul our immigration policies. They were written in the 1950s. By the way, Ernie, I haven't done this in a while. So the immigration stuff. So
philosophy, so man. I don't care about the nit and tittle or the whatever. You know, just tell me what you're, what you're hoping to accomplish.
So I think that there are two overriding principles that our immigration policy needs to be guided by. First, belief in the value of immigration. Immigration is the fuel of America's spirit. And so former Governor Bush and I are both passionately pro-immigration. When you look at the people working on the farms, when you look at the people working in the tech industry, these are people we need more of, not less of. The other principle, the other overriding principle is the rule of law. Immigration has to, we are a sovereign nation. We do have the right and responsibility to police our borders. We have to have a legal system that makes sense and is based not on family ties. A lot of people don't recognize that 40% of our legal immigration is moms, dads, sisters, brothers. This was a huge change made in the 1960s. It's called chain migration. As soon as you're in, you can bring, literally, ultimately, dozens of family members. So our immigration system has primarily been family-based since the 1960s. We believe it ought to be economics-based, that we ought to bring in, we ought to prioritize people who are hardworking, who can contribute to the American economy, who will give more than they take. So we would end chain migration. We would increase the number of visas for high-tech workers, for people to fill positions Americans are not filling.
So you're managed and so immigration. On. You're picking and choosing and kind of doing, and you're allowed and you're not.
Well, that has always been that ultimately, unless you have a complete open border system, you are going to be doing that. And right now, what we're doing is prioritizing family members. Overall, we would increase the numbers of legal immigrants. And
so anti-family Clint Bullock is, well, what is the mindset is, I would think that. Like Trump would say the same thing. I mean, is he advocating, no immigration, or is he going, the right people, the white people? What is he saying anyway?
It's really hard to say. Since the election, his tone on reforming immigration has been more encouraging than it was during the campaign when it really just seemed like he was anti-immigration. For example, the Dreamers, he now seems to be saying that he never meant to say that he was going to send them packing.
Except when he said he was sending them packing.
yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's hard to know. We haven't seen a real plan submitted, but his rhetoric has been less harsh than it was before. But you're right, as of late, although he has actually been erecting some serious obstacles, particularly for high-tech visas, which is so self-defeating because every high-tech worker we bring into this country creates 5 downstream jobs. And even farm workers, they create upstream jobs. When Georgia and Alabama got rid of their illegal immigrants, it cost those two states nearly $2 billion in lost agricultural productivity.
Oh, no, here in Arizona, Yuma, where they got, lettuce, man, it's sitting out in the field rotten. They didn't like it.
That's absolutely right. And so he's starting to figure these things out, but the proof will be in what we see. Obviously, his fixation is the wall. Bush and I, in our book, oppose the wall. That's not to say we oppose border security, quite the contrary, but we don't think a wall is a good idea.
Yeah, no, let's get a Berlin Wall, keep me in kind of thing. I was like, I'm not feeling good about that. Well, I want to get, when we come back, we'll get the principle behind it. Is there something, because, he's like, they're defending the Constitution and such. We're going to find out what that means when we come back in just a little bit. Arizona Justice Clint Bullock, just a little bit. Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary, I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find. Yeah, piratswithoutborders.com. You got to check it out, man. Oh, we're going pirate. You know, that's another thing. Okay, when we come back, I'm going to enter. We're going to talk about your tattoo real quick.
That's fair enough.
So you can tell me what I'll have some fun, you know, bringing this in. But you know, the main thing is I'd like to get some kind of a feeling of this last 2 years and your integration into the court, and then what you see is coming and trends and what influences you've had and blah blah blah. Because you know, making it to the Supreme Court, I mean, you got Mark Victor all encouraged, man. He's like, hey, one of us made it. You know, crap, I'd love to be a little bit of government now, you know? Gosh, seriously.
Yeah, if you can get Mark Victor encouraged, that's a pretty big deal.
You know you have, because he's like, wait. Looks like one of us made it, you know? Did we? I mean, you know, you feel like there's a shift. I mean, what's going? Does Ducey have any, you know, buyer's remorse or anything?
I hope not. You know, I think he knew me very well when he appointed me, and I think that I've been true to myself. You know, true to my principles, true to what I told him I would be as a justice, and so hopefully he does not. But you'd have to ask him.
Well, just to finish on the immigration thing, you know, I don't want government in charge of any, you know, if I don't want them on my land, it's my land, bite me. But, you know, oh, it's the public domain of, we're public land of publicly, we public, and, you know, the buffalo shall not roam or whatever. And I'm just, I don't like that kind of solution. So the solution that you're looking at is, okay, we're going to go ahead and define borders. We're going to be Merca. And then we're going to set a standard, and that standard is set by whom?
Well, the standard ultimately is going to be set by Congress, or at least it's supposed to be under the Constitution. Congress has exclusive authority over naturalization.
Okay, so you think that standard should be what? Set by Congress, or Congress should set a certain standard? I mean, what are you advocating?
Well, the standard we think that we outline in the book is that basically we have first of all, for the people who came here illegally, so long as they are working, contributing to the economy, they would be permitted to stay. You know, if they've not committed any crimes, but they would not be eligible for citizenship. For their kids who were brought here by their parents, they would have a path for citizenship.
I hear we're coming back. Here we go.
Live.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Oh, it matters not. He is your king. I don't know. Is Clint one of those guys? I don't know. He's a little bit of a rebel. You know, here we got Reuters. Top Arizona court rules tattooing is protected speech. Well, that was in, September of 12. So it opened it up. They could appoint Clint Bullock. He's all tatted up. So, you know, it opened the way, okay? Well, what I'm talking about, there's some tattoo that you have some pictures of you, and on your finger, you know, kind of doing, you know, as a little tattoo. Tell me about that. There was some bet or something. What the heck was that about?
Well, Ernie, I proudly represented those tattoo studios, particularly one in Tempe, where they had spent like $25,000 to repair and build up a little studio in a half-empty strip mall. And the city of Tempe thought that was intolerable and took away their user permit. And so that's the type of litigation I enjoyed doing. And so we took on the tattoo artists. And as was often the case in my litigation, I got really into the case. And I said, you know what? If we win this case, I am going to get inked. And right around that time, my wife was considering running for office. And she said, you know, I wish you would not get inked. And I said, well, I wish you wouldn't run for office. And I did, and she did. But what happened was when we won the case, and the Arizona Supreme Court became the first state Supreme Court in the country to recognize tattooing as a protected form of speech, I got a scorpion tattoo on my right index finger. The symbolism of that, well, is twofold. First of all, every book, every brief, every article I have ever written in my life, I have typed with one finger. I am not even a two-finger typist. I'm a one-finger typist. So that is my typing finger. And I thought,
is there a stinger?
Yeah, that's my stinger, exactly. So I thought a little desert creature with a sting would be perfect to put on there. And my wife tells me that that is my last tattoo, and I cherish our marriage enough to make that the case.
You know, that's amazing that you have a Supreme Court justice with a finger with a scorpion on it. Oh, get some. Dear, 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 dear. That's awesome.
The first openly inked justice.
Okay. So this top Arizona court rules tattooing is protected speech was your case?
Yes.
Ah, score. Okay. 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 Yeah, you got to give me the inside. It's been a couple of years, man. Give me the inside of the other justices. And, oh, God, here comes Clint. Or, yay, it's Clint. Looks like we're going to have a party. I mean, you know, tell me what's going on.
Well, probably not surprisingly, I have written separately, either dissenting or concurring, in my 2 years on the court so far, as much as all of my colleagues put together, and then perhaps then some. That doesn't mean that
What are we looking at? You know, dozens, hundreds? I mean,
I would say probably about a dozen or 15 concurring and dissenting opinions thus far. This is typically, now also it's important to note, the court expanded in size from 5 to 7 a year ago. I was already on the court. I was on the court when it was at 5.
Whoa, I did. So, when did I, not that I pay attention, that I don't care, but you know, that's not an easy thing to do. How the hell did that happen?
Well, Governor Ducey thought, you know, the court was built for 7 justices 25 years ago. They figured that eventually with Arizona's rapid population growth, the court would grow as well. And so half of my time on the court, it's been 5, and the last half, it's been 7. And with 7 justices, of course, what happens, you have more opportunities to disagree as well as to agree. It's tougher to get unanimous opinions.
Okay, anyway, before we get into that, I you know, my question is, how did they change it from 5 to 7? Is that a constitutional, a vote, a decree, a push a button,
actually,
something?
Actually, it was simply a bill in the legislature, and the governor championed it. And I think it surprised a lot of people. It certainly surprised me.
That's not a constitutional thing that had to be voted on by the people?
It is not. The size of the court is not decreed in the Constitution.
Really?
Yes, in fact, when we started as a state, there were only three justices. So we've more than doubled in size since statehood.
Well, you know what comes to mind? It was the threat to the, what was it? During FDR, there was 9, and he threatened to go to 12. If they didn't, they had to go through and change. In the U.S. Constitution, does it specify a number?
It does not.
Really?
That is right.
Okay.
So and the size of the U.S. Supreme Court has changed over time. And fortunately, Roosevelt's effort to pack the court was unsuccessful.
Okay. Well, this, you know, well, looks like Ducey got to do some packing here. Okay. So
well,
these other two, what's the mindset of them?
I would say they are more traditionally conservative than I. Both of them come from prosecutor backgrounds. Justice John Lopez worked in the U.S. Attorney's Office. He was in the military.
Government do no wrong. They get to do.
Well,
yes, they get to search.
Definitely not. I have to say, in fact, I joined a concurring opinion that Justice Lopez wrote in a criminal case that definitely was not of that mindset. And Justice Andrew Gould served as a prosecutor, then as a trial judge, and then as a member of the Court of Appeals. So I would say that they are, they definitely come from a more prosecutorial background and a more traditionally conservative bent than I.
Okay, give me... You know, a view into the future based on what you've experienced the last couple of years of kind of the cases where you see freedoms expanding. You know, you're there to be able to make an argument. Hell, that's what you did, you know? So, you know, give me some good news here.
Well, I will give you some good news.
We're going into the break. it's going to get, you know, I tell you, let's hold that. That's what we're going to do when we come back because, you know, there's been case law. I mean, you know, there's, you know, Clint's sitting there doing it, and we got a friend on the court there. Well, is he a friend? We're going to find out when we come back in just a little bit. Clint Bolick, you know what? You know, real quick, are you enjoying yourself?
I am having a blast.
Woo! Okay, we'll get all the scheduling details, when they meet and how much, and cases that they're considering now and ones they've done in the past couple of years and the trend of the future, prediction of the future, and when we come back. Clint Bolick, Justice, Arizona Supreme Court, in just a little bit.
The Free State Project has reached its goal of 20,000.
Yeah, we'll save that for when we come back. But so how is your wife doing? Is she just, you know, digging it, being first lady of justice kind of thing? Or is she still involved?
She is super involved. In fact, she's running for the legislature this year. We moved 3 years ago, and we're in a different district. And knock on wood, I think she's got a very, very good shot this time.
Oh, my God. I can see the stories already. How are they going to do this legislature wife thing?
Well, you know, there's more and more these days you have
I apologize. I can't remember. Sharon?
Shauna.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, more and more you've got husband and wife duos where, you know, where they're both in very significant positions. Probably in our state, the most significant is Attorney General Brnovich, and his wife is Superior Court Judge Susan Brnovich. So you can imagine.
That's not the same as state legislator and Supreme Court justice.
Well, we shall see if that comes to pass.
What's she running for?
State House.
Okay, and she's like, you know, clear way or what?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, there's a lot of musical chairs going on in our area with the resignation of
Trent. No, I know.
Trent
this is
Franks.
Awesome. This is awesome.
So, so we'll see how the dust settles, but I think she's got a very, very good chance, and she's been working really hard in the trenches before running, and as you know, that counts for a lot.
Yeah. Tell me about, you know, having a chief, you know, I keep wanting to say chief, having a justice on the Supreme Court, you know, doesn't suck either, you know?
It's cool. It's really cool.
Well,
it's
I can tell you, it's kind of, you know, that just, wow. That's there's a movie in there somewhere, you know. The
pretty boring movie.
No, I can amp it up, man. You know, the Trent Franks thing, you got an opinion?
You know, I Trent is a is a
Donna told you we're recording in the archive, FYI.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. No, Trent's a friend of mine. I'm just, you know, heartsick about the whole thing.
You know, I knew Trent. We were good friends in the mid-90s. We went to the same church, and he helped raise my four kids, him and Josie.
Wow.
And when he first ran for Congress in 94, I was he had a big, giant, you know, 700-800 people event at, God, where was it? You know, it was one of the resorts, I don't know, Camelback Inn or something, whatever. And it was, we sat at the head table with him. And he was the only politician, including libertarians, only politician I've ever regularly contributed to, because I believed that he really believed, you know, the stuff. But once he got in and kind of, I just, you know, we kind of had a falling out, because I'm just like, no, I'm not going down this road. And so I wasn't happy that, you know, what happened. I don't even really know the, I don't care. But Pal Gamble, my senior editor, ran against him like, I don't know, three or four times. I mean, we were always hammering on him. He wasn't digging it. So this is, you know, interesting that the entire, with Flake going out, McCain going, Trent going, musical chairs has been amazing in this state.
Oh, it really, I think we're going to be the number one state as far as political focus, because we've got the governor, you know, both Senate seats probably, and some movement on the House side, you know, with Sinema running for the Senate and McSally running for the Senate. So this
okay,
is...
Okay, here we're coming back. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
In Arizona, IA, I don't know, when you get a, you know, well-known, self-proclaimed kind of, you know, libertarian, if not at least libertarian. You know, that's one thing. What do you call yourself on the bench? You're going, yes, I am a libertarian, or I kind of sort of know libertarians, or what?
You know, I would say the word that I would use to describe myself is a constitutionalist. And, you know, that the Constitution doesn't always lead to libertarian outcomes. So I sometimes have to check my own policy notions at the door. Well, I always have to check them at the door. But fortunately, both our federal and our state constitution are primarily freedom charters. And so if I'm true to the text of the Constitution, then more often than not, the outcome will be in favor of freedom.
You know, that's what it's supposed to be. But as you're doing national level, and then you come down to Arizona, and there's other state constitutions I'm sure you're familiar with. I'm going, Arizona, what do you think compared to most constitutions, even the federal? How does it compare?
You know, I think it's very good because, you know, it includes some of the basic protections like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and so forth, but also some provisions that the earlier constitutions, the earlier state constitutions, that is, did not have in them. For example, it's got an anti-gift clause that prohibits the expenditure of government money in the form of gifts or subsidies.
Oh, that stopped.
Yes, it's got, well, it's we've made some serious headway in enforcing that provision. It's got an anti-monopoly clause and not speaking of private monopolies, but government monopolies. It's got an explicit protection of privacy. And on and on. So I, you know, it was an early progressive era constitution, and it was at the time when progressives were skeptical of both government and business power, and especially skeptical about the combination of business, corporate, and government power. And so we've got some nifty provisions in our Constitution, and it depends on groups and lawyers and plaintiffs bringing those kinds of provisions before us.
Well, let me tell you a story, okay?
Please
do. The short story is I've had three cases before the Supreme Court, arguing myself. I go up there, and it's very, 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 very freaking clear that the Arizona Constitution does allow, demand, prevents, certain things. And it is a really good document compared to other constitutions,
yes,
because we were the Enabling Act and kind of said it shall be. The one thing in the Enabling Act, it said that the Arizona Constitution shall not be repugnant to the letter and spirit or whatever of the U.S. Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence. That's the first time I ever saw the Declaration of Independence as like a legal reference, a document,
Mm-hmm.
So I go, really? Mm-hmm. So we went through, various different cases. When it gets down to it, not so much, in favor of, and the government gets to whatever. So it comes down to you guys, It's the interpretation of it. What it says don't mean squat. Because I like the Arizona Constitution. It kicks butt. But they've been watering it down a little bit. I can't believe, man, years ago they just had a whole big giant blanket referendum that went up and changed a bunch of stuff. And I'm going, really? So I'm of the opinion that it comes down to Clint Bollocks in there to determine how it's interpreted. What say ye?
Well, Ernie, you've raised a really good point, and there's a recent case that the court decided that I think really illustrates what you're saying. As you know, we have charter cities in Arizona, and the Constitution gives those charter cities very specific authority. And the city of Tucson, as you probably know, decided that any guns that it seized would be destroyed. And the state legislature passed a law saying you can't destroy seized guns. So there was a huge clash between the legislature and the city of Tucson, and that case came to us. And what the court majority did, they ruled against the city of Tucson. They struck down the city of Tucson's law. But what the court did was exactly what you were describing. Instead of beginning with the language of the Constitution, the court began by looking at our past decisions. And those decisions have watered down the language of the Constitution, basically a rewriting, literally rewriting since the 1950s, very clear language in the Constitution, which makes charter cities subject to the laws of the state. And I think that's a direct quote. And so I wrote a concurring opinion. I agreed with the outcome that the court reached, which is that the city of Tucson did not have the power to destroy confiscated guns.
Why?
Because of this charter provision in the state constitution that basically says that charter laws are subject to the laws of the state of Arizona.
And why? Is there some state of Arizona thing you can't melt down guns?
Right, yes. The legislature had passed a contrary law saying cities cannot destroy confiscated guns. They have to be returned to the marketplace. And so in my concurring opinion, I said, this is how you should interpret the Constitution. You should start with the language of the Constitution. If that language is clear, then you enforce those words and you have no further analysis. Our job is not to align the Constitution to our precedents. Our job is to align our precedents to the Constitution.
Okay. Now, then we have a book by you, David's Hammer, The Case for an Activist Judiciary. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, basically, almost everyone, when they talk about judicial activism, they use it in a negative sense. And my argument there was that the framers, and here I'm talking about the framers of the United States Constitution, intended the judiciary to be a guardian of our constitutional freedoms. And as government has grown dramatically, of course, in the last many decades, the number of decisions striking down unconstitutional laws has not grown commensurately. And it's not that the government has not passed more unconstitutional laws. And I think that, properly speaking, an activist court is one that enforces every word of the Constitution. And if that means striking laws down, if it means striking down actions of the executive branch that exceed constitutional boundaries, then we need more activism, not less.
All right. Activism in the form of freedom. All right. I'm good. All right. Now, this is when you talked about guns to the marketplace, you know, what comes to mind in the 90s, it used to be that you would they would seize a gun, they'd go through the court process, we don't need it anymore, and it would go into an auction. And the auction that they had, the individual guns, people would go down and they'd, you know, bid on them and buy a gun for $200-$300 or whatever, and it would go into buying ammunition or supplies for police officers.
Right.
And so I remember this, and everybody would go down, hey, you know, it's kind of freedom, and everything. No, anti-gun, you can't do that. So what'd they do? Here you had these gun retailers and so on. They got them to make it 5 guns at a time, then 10 guns, then $10,000 worth of guns. And it was just to get them out of the free market of individuals going down and doing it for the benefit of the, you know, big retail buyers of whatever. And I'm going, yay. They stay within the Constitution. It's just an attitude. Is it down to the people or is that special interest? Gee, I wonder if, you know, Justice Bullock knows what I'm talking about. More when we come back. From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. Oh, yeah, privacy. What's your deal on that? You know, none of your business. They're going to be freedom of internet you don't get to have and you don't see, and I'm out in the satellite mesh network of you don't get to listen to no encrypted to bite me. You know, how's the court coming down on that?
We would have to see. But, you know, Arizona does have, unlike the U.S. Constitution, Arizona has an explicit protection of privacy in our Constitution.
All right, let me pull that bad boy up. Yeah, as I read the Arizona State Constitution, and we did all kinds of creative stuff, but it was, I was really impressed with how thorough I thought it was. I mean, for the time, you know, we're like a, what was it, like 120 years since the founding, and we're number state 48, so I guess we figured we had, you know, some experience, you know, how we're going to do it. Let's see, Constitution of Arizona, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so your privacy thing is where?
It's in Article 2, which is our Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which number it is.
Okay, Article 2, yeah, it's yeah, Article 2 is Declaration of Rights of something. You know, it's kind of our Bill of Rights, but it's like 32 of them or something.
Right.
Let's see. I think it'd be easier to find. All right. Well, I'll just go to Arizona legislature thing here and do it. Declaration of Rights to... Yeah, what I liked about there, it says the Supreme Law... is And then, oh, yeah, and you get down, it says, oh, yeah, by the way, go look at that one again. let's see. Okay, so due process, fundamental principles, recurrent. Oh, yeah, section one. I want to do that one. This is, as I remember, a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles is essential to the security of individual rights and the perpetuity of free government. Okay. Let's see. Political power, purpose of government. Yay. All political power is inherent in the people, and governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed and are established to protect and maintain individual rights. See, that one right there is kind of, you know, endeared it to me a little bit. Okay, see if there's a privacy thing in here.
Section 8.
Right to privacy. Well, that's, I guess they titled it. Okay. No person shall be disturbed in his private affairs or his home invaded without authority of law. See, they always do this authority of law thing. It's like we're at the Declaration of Rights, I mean, the Bill of Rights thing on the 15th. You know, it's the same kind of, well, except where we say we can, you know. All right, hold on. Here we go.
That's gunsandweed.com.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I tell you, my big thing is, the one thing you want to get, man, we'll get into it a little bit, is just be left alone on, it's my freaking land, man. I'm still waiting for that. They're always, we're going to, do this, you can have a job, you can do a business, you don't have to have a permit, to work. I want to build like a shed on my, out in the middle of unincorporated desert to bite me, and no, not so much. I'm like, who the hell runs this freaking state, man? It's not to free me from, we'll get into that. But here in Arizona's Constitution, you have a Declaration of Rights, and it goes, God, how many do they have? I think it's like 30-something. Yeah, it's down to 30, section 37. Oh, they keep getting longer here. Okay.
Yes, I am happy to say I authored a couple of those.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Institute for Justice and Goldwater Institute, and you're going at what were the ones that you had? It was something about property.
That was actually a statute, the Private Property Rights Protection Act, some time ago. And so we prohibit the use of eminent domain for private use.
After that Kilo thing and all that stuff.
Exactly.
And then Bailey's Brake Shop and made, I remember all that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yes. And then there are two provisions, though, that I was involved in drafting and supporting. One is the Healthcare Freedom Act, which protects the right of individuals to freely choose their own doctors and not to be forced to join a healthcare system, essentially, by the government, that is. And secondly, we passed a provision that we talked about at the Bill of Rights event, which is that if the people or the legislature deem a federal law or regulation to exceed the proper governmental powers at the federal government, we can decree that no public funds, no state funds will be used to enforce that law and or regulation. And that obviously is a federalism provision.
Well, has it been enacted or used at all yet?
It has. It was passed overwhelmingly by the voters, as was the Healthcare Freedom Act. It is, to my knowledge, not ever yet been invoked. So that is a tool, a freedom tool that exists in our Constitution.
Ooh, go get some on that someday. I just feel it. A comment. How would Clint rule on something like that? Okay, so this, section two, this is, this kind of, a lot of things that are in the Arizona State Constitution, the purpose, political power, and the purpose of government. All political power is inherent in the people, and governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed and are established to protect and maintain individual rights. Is that right there, if somebody were to cite that, does that give you a big, giant umbrella to be able to make a decision?
You know, I think that what that does is it ought to inform our decisions involving individual rights. In other words, let's say you were asserting freedom of speech, or you were asserting the privacy right that we were talking about. And it was a close call between government power and the individual right that you were asserting. We would look to that provision, or we should look to that provision, and say, hey, what is the purpose of this document? The purpose of this document is crystal clear. It is to protect individual rights. So it would be, I'm not sure that it would necessarily be a source of rights that aren't found elsewhere, but it certainly would tell us how we ought to weigh the arguments before.
Okay, I'll tell you, Clint, in my, you know, activism, especially in the 90s when I would just, man, I just wanted them to say it, make them say it. I knew they were going to do whatever, but I wanted them to freaking say it. And sooner or later, there's going to be another Ernie just to make you say it, okay? When that happens, it's going to be based on, you know, well, let's look at the right to privacy. No person shall be disturbed in his private affairs or his home invaded without authority of law. See, the point is that when we were up there and we read the each of the Bill of Rights, I had number 3, which is quartering of troops. And I picked that one before because I figured, yeah, there's not that much to say about it. They aren't quartering troops. As you start doing research, the hell they're not. You know, they take over your house and we're surveilling and kick you out and you're not allowed. And then case law going back and forth. And you look at the Constitution and it was, you know, kind of a PR, the Bill of Rights was like a PR document, you know, oh, we pinky swear this thing that we did to wage war and tax and, you know, regulate commerce over here. Well, we won't do all this stuff, so ratify it. It was a PR campaign. Well, one of the things that they did in the Third Amendment is the king had issued a decree saying you shall have a soldier in your house and get over it. And so they put that in there. We will not do that, except in times of war. Well, when have we not been at some war? And then as prescribed by law. Well, they're always prescribing law. You know, I'm just going to, hell, they just wrote it in there, the very thing that they were bitching at the king for doing, they gave him the power to do. And I'm going, what the hell is that? So I'm going, this authority of law thing all the time. So I'm just looking for the purpose of individual rights. And I tell you where it comes down, you're going to get, here comes Ernie. It's going to be when I buy my 10, 15, 20, whatever acres out in the middle of the desert and unincorporated leave me aloneism, and I want to build or do something, nope, you're not allowed. And I'm going, okay, we take care of your water and air. We're not polluting. We got the, you know, the prescribed septic. I limit my well to whatever. But other than that, you know, bite me. I'm building whatever, and I want that protected. How would I argue that? Give me something. There's got to be some freedom in there. I get to enjoy the private and peaceful use of my property. Where is that? And I go to Goldwater and all these guys, well, not so much. We'll let you, so you can have a business in your garage, maybe, and or we can do it. It's like the developers control this state. And I want to know where I'm going to be, get to be free on my land. Because if I can't do that, then what the hell are you guys good for?
Well, Ernie, one of the many things I'm not allowed to do anymore as a justice of the Arizona Supreme Court is to give legal advice.
And he skates. You know?
Well, you however, I will say that this conversation has been enormously useful because freedom advocates too often ignore the state constitution. They look at the Ninth Amendment, which obviously hasn't been hardly any use to freedom lovers, freedom advocates, you know, and they look at other provisions of the U.S. Constitution, and they too rarely look at the more protective provisions of our state constitution.
Well, I give you an example. Let's say I'll go, nope, I get to build whatever. Then I do another suit. No, I don't want to have to do that one, that one, that one, that one. So of all the enjoyment of my private property, they'll take, I've had this happen, okay? They combine the 3 or 4 issues, have nothing to do with each other just because it's the same person, then dismiss on whatever the weakest argument is and not reference any of the others. It is a game. I am up against a philosophy. I'm up against a power that it rests in the hands of the king, and it matters not. He is your king. And I'm like, this king, this whole deal that they made, and certainly with the Enabling Act for Arizona to become a state, they referenced the Declaration of Independence as a document.
Yes.
I was amazed by that. I'm going, oh, hell yeah. Well, that spirit is not freaking there. And I'm going, you being there, are we shifting the other way? Are we getting more, you know, down to the individual? You see that coming, or the sentiments of the court is starting to go that way? Or
well,
I got a new battle to fight.
I certainly hope that the sentiment of the court is moving more and more toward giving meaning to every word in the Constitution. And if that happens, it's going to be unquestionably a freedom direction. Having said that, this court has been traditionally better than most courts in the country. You mentioned the Bailey's Brake Service case. While Suzette Kelo was losing her home and losing her neighborhood in the U.S. Supreme Court, the Arizona courts were saying, not here in Arizona. We protect private property rights. And that's happened repeatedly in this state.
Well, but it's always because of a PR battle. And that's what, you know, Institute for Justice, Goldwater, and your efforts and ours and helping and everything has always been about. It's always what the people want. And slaves are great until the people don't like it no more, you know? Prohibition's great until the people just don't like it anymore. Everything's okay until the people don't like it anymore. Are the people coming into this freedom thing? Are they giving you support?
Oh, I feel it all the time.
Well, this is... Well, here... Oh, someday... going to be Ernie again saying hello. And Clint will have to make a decision. Well, maybe he wants to. We'll find out. Clint Bullock, Justice. We'll just call him Chief. Justice at the Arizona Supreme Court representing, and we'll keep you informed.
The Shire Free.
There you go. Thanks, Clint.
Hey, that went fast as always. And I look forward to seeing you at Freedom Summit, if not before.
Yeah, no, we'll be there, and then and we'll put on the dog and get all pirated up and stuff. But I tell you, I try to avoid. I was just waiting to file a lot. Man, you got to say it. Well, now it gets to the point. I tell you when it's going to happen. It's like I run against McCain as soon as he was telling the Chicago Tribune how libertarian he was. Okay. So when the Supreme Court and you guys start screaming how libertarian they are and we're going to freedom and doing that, and I got something that's really eking me, I'll make you say it. You know, I am let's do it. And what I had done in the past, when I go to the Supreme Court, there's, I can't remember it now, Rule 4 of whatever it is. There is a provision that if a agency or individual of state authority is prevented by the law from doing something and does it, or required to do it and doesn't do it, I can go straight to the Supreme Court. And that's what I did. It was on the Education Overcharge Fund on, was the main thing I was hammering on them about. And then we did the gun thing, you know, when they, you know, they finally passed a law saying you have to obey this other law. So now we got gun lockers. I mean, seriously? So I'm this kind of crap, man. I'm telling you, if you're going to give credibility to this court and I come in with some property thing, I'm going to really push that. It's like there's a force up against, there's not enough support, there's not enough landowners, there's not enough votes or something. I don't know what it is, but the principle is so clear. When it comes down to, I'm going to finally get a little bit of property and do it, I'm going to make a big giant deal out of this. You're either supporting my right to property and the free use of, and I can kind of bite me. Heck, I pay taxes on it, and I still can't. It just bothers me. You cannot be a free state, and I can't, you know, enjoy the peaceful, you know, not bother anybody use of my land. That just is not going to, you know, convince me that we're, like, got freedom.
Well, Ernie, I would welcome that day. And although I love what I'm doing now and I find it very fulfilling, I rely on people bringing cases to the court. And, you know, back in at Goldwater, if I wanted a lawsuit, I filed a lawsuit, right? And here, you know, we get what comes to us. And so I'm glad you're thinking in those terms because, you know, it's really exciting to get cases that present those kinds of issues.
I know. I'll make you say it, man. Say it! Say it! All right. Hey, thanks for being a good sport and coming on. This is awesome.
Well, thanks for having me. And happy new year.
You too. You know, we should check in on a regular basis. When do you think it would be a good time to, what's the news in and you could talk about or not or whatever?
Well, you know, everything really, it really depends. Our ebb and flow is very unpredictable. So if you read about a cool decision or something like that, or a not so cool decision, give me a ring.
Yeah, I pay attention that much. I am so far past. I just, I'm in the, you know, make me care. I mean, you know, I just, it's, I'm more a cultural thing. I'd be probably more interested in how your wife runs and what's going on. We're going to get involved in 18 politics this year. Just on, oh, there you go. It's going to be a First Amendment if I didn't get a permission slip to put a sign up or something.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, one of the first things I did when I got here, there was a rule that not only can't judges put political signs out, they said judges' spouses couldn't. And you can imagine, Shauna's reaction to that. So I wrote a request for an opinion, and I said, hey, you have no jurisdiction over my wife, and what she puts on our property is her business. And they issued an opinion saying that she does have a free speech right to put signs on our property. So she has done so with gusto.
You know what pisses me off? The fact that they even got to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not digging it, you know. It's gonna all right, well, expect something someday they're gonna flip my switch again, you know. It's not like I know what you have, what form I gotta fill out. Boom, done. Here, let's do it. All right. Hey, thanks for coming
good
on
to
Clint.
Talk to you, Ernie. Take care of yourself.
You too, man. Happy new year. Bye.
You too. Bye.